Good afternoon. The next matter is case 75279. And excuse my pronunciation on these names. I don't, I probably won't come close, but I will try. It's Nedka Ilieva Klimas and Raymond Estupinian. Hope that's close. And we have Ms. McFarlane appearing for the appellant. And does she use both names, like a hyphenated name? Do you know?
Yes.
So it's Ms. Ilieva Klimas?
Yes.
Klimas?
Ilieva Klimas.
Klimas. Oh, that's close. All right. And Ms. Bassett appearing for the respondent. And that's not an easy one either. Mr. Estupinian.
Estupinian.
Wow. Three syllables. And you're appearing through the pro bono program? All right. Well, thank you for taking this case on. The court has received, of course, the briefs, and this is a fast track, so there's no reply brief. Do you want to save some time for rebuttal anyway, Ms. McFarlane?
Yes, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
Okay, 5 minutes. How many issues do you have? Okay, you're going to have to go fast.
I believe the appellant in the last case noted that case had a long, tortured history. I would say this one does as well. And, you know, the recent orders in it, you know, create this odd issue of what's appealable, what's a final order, and the jurisdiction for this appeal and the problem with a judge making an order final retroactively kind of get wrapped up together. So the big issue in this case is that we have, you know, we have a decree of custody for joint physical custody from a long time ago, many years ago. There's repetitive motions in this case throughout many years. Each one of them is denied with a reaffirmation of joint physical custody. And it stays that way until we get to the motion filed by Dad that gave rise to the last couple years of litigation. And at how the proceedings played out and the judge's handling of finality and lack of finality is really one of the problems that needs to be addressed in this appeal. Basically, if you have two parents that show up to court for a hearing that's an initial hearing or a return hearing on a motion to change custody, so a hearing that's not expected to result in a final custody order absent an agreement, then the court shouldn't be able to define its own orders as a result of that hearing as being final orders, especially retroactively. But the problem with what the judge did in this case is that we have a January hearing where the parties reach a temporary custody agreement. And at that time, we have a CPS substantiation appeal that's pending for my client. And so they have a temporary agreement, they have a referral for a custody evaluation, and they have a return hearing. The custody evaluation doesn't get done, and at that return hearing in June of 2017, then if you read the transcript from that hearing, it's none of it makes any sense, right? There's no orders from that hearing. There's nothing that's even clearly articulated by the judge or either attorney or either party that should cause anybody, especially my client, to walk away from that and think, I just agreed to a final custody order and we're done, right? There's nothing that should raise to the level of saying, yes, you settled, you agreed to change custody, even though you're appealing a substantiation, you settled for a final custody order, and therefore it's said and done. And that transcript spends, I don't know, 80% of it talking about financial issues and attorneys and the judge talking over them, each other. And there's not even very many places where you can even get to a point of discerning what what anyone means or what they're talking about. There's a place where the judge says we need to get to final orders on things, and that's about as close as you get to a discussion of that.
Ms. McBride, you have that January 2017 hearing, and it stated your client's moving to Florida, and therefore she agrees to custody. But a very short time after that, apparently it changed. And so there's a second amended order that's not filed until November that says it was a temporary custody arrangement. So I assume that takes into account this referral that you're talking about in the evaluation. So when they came in in the August order, doesn't say anything about it. It talks about we were here on this return hearing, and the court lays out the schedule with the every other weekend. Doesn't say it's a final order. Doesn't say what it is. It just sort of it's like extra language. It's just in this order. And then you come to the 2018 and the February order that comes out of that when the judge canceled the hearing and makes it retroactive, like you said. So it's a very unusual procedure, to say the least.
Yes. Yes, it is. The nice thing, at least in the record, is that at the January hearing, in the transcript, Dad's attorney very clearly states this is a temporary agreement. And that record is clear. The minutes are clear. And even though Dad left the word temporary out of the original order, the judge did correct that appropriately. And not to mention that was appropriately a temporary order.
Let's assume you're right about this. So it was only a temporary order that was in effect. So where does that leave us when you get to the February order now? February 2018.
So, and because it's such an odd history, that's where it gets convoluted. But the big issue is that hearing that occurred in June 2017, it was just a return hearing, and in it, you know, there's a bunch that was discussed, but no final conclusions, and especially nothing that my client could have walked away with and said, "We're done here. He has primary, and I agreed to it." And no setting of an evidentiary hearing. Even though the January hearing, there's notes that there'll need to be one. There was this referral to a child custody evaluation. So then we have that June hearing, an August order from it, and then when it comes back around and pointed out to the judge, hey, we need to get a new evaluation. The judge had said at that hearing that if mom wanted a new evaluator, she could just file an ex parte request to replace the evaluator with someone cheaper, which we did, and that got denied, and the motion that gave rise to that final order, final meaning the last order from February 2018, the judge basically went back and said, oh, you know what, it wasn't clear before. We had this hearing, and I'm going to retroactively define something that had no basis in being a final order. In order to have a final custody order, you need to have an agreement or an evidentiary hearing or material facts that are not in dispute. Clearly, the facts giving rise to custody in this case were very much in dispute. You know, they have to do with incidents that happened and things, you know, he said, she said situations. So they're not, it wasn't the type of situation where the court could have summarily made a final order without having an evidentiary hearing, because there's so much he said, she said in the issues giving rise to the custody dispute.
So you're saying the February 18 order cannot be in effect because there never was an agreement and there never was a hearing.
There was no agreement for a final custody order. There was no evidentiary hearing. There were material facts that were in dispute that were relevant. And the order, the February order, granted a modification of custody. And so while throughout this case history, there are denials of motions that are appropriately done without an evidentiary hearing, maintaining joint physical custody, the court could not have granted the motion to modify without an agreement or without an evidentiary hearing. And that is what she did. And to make matters even worse, her basis for that was to go back through the child custody evaluations that had all been prior to reaffirmations. The first custody order was after the first child custody evaluation that she cited in her order to modify custody. And then again, there was another evaluation, and again, the judge reaffirmed joint physical custody. And throughout this whole history, we have these continuing orders for joint physical custody, and the two child custody evaluations that are the primary basis for Judge Elliott's February 2018 order are those child custody evaluations. And we know from the recent Nance decision that you can only use this past history of the case defensively. You cannot use it offensively. And that is exactly what Judge Elliott did in this case. She went back and looked through the case history, found anything she could find that was negative in those evaluations towards mom, and used those as a basis to take away joint physical custody and give dad primary, when those reports had been the basis for continuing joint physical custody orders in the prior litigation over and over again.
One of the orders, though, says that counsel are agreeing to use some of the past information, and it wasn't specific to me. I was having a hard time parsing that, saying exactly what was agreed to. I mean, you could see how the judge might want to do it in this case, if there's a pattern of behavior and you're trying to determine in this case if the mother had changed her behavior, and so you have to relate it to something that was said in the past and then see what it is in the present. You know, it's somewhat analogous to the domestic violence situation. I mean, different but somewhat analogous. So that's why I was thinking the order said the parties were agreeing to use some past information, but not all.
And that would be the order from the January 2017 hearing.
I'll see if I can find it real fast. But
I will look for that in my rebuttal in the transcript. I believe it was that January 2017 hearing where there was some discussion of McMonagle in it. But the reality, it goes back to that same thing. If somebody's agreeing to something such as allowing all evidence to be taken into account by a judge in granting a motion to modify, something to that extent, it really needs to be a little more clearly agreed to on the record. So a judge saying, hey, I'm going to do this, and no one saying, no, I understand what you're saying, and no, you can't do that, should not be sufficient for a judge to go in and take away someone's rights to make sure that the information used for the prior custody orders can't get brought up again and again and again. So even if the judge in saying that may have wanted to force the parties to agree to allow in all prior evidence, she shouldn't be able to do that. And that would not be appropriate for her to have done without it being absolutely clear what was being agreed to.
It's the second amended order from the January 9, 2017 hearing, and the order was filed on November 16, 2017. And it says the parties agreed to recognize McMonagle, which is the case about not using the older evidence. But the parties agree that McMonagle does not apply to anything except the prior order for February 2016 and agree to the ability to relitigate and introduce facts that were part of the original proceedings. So this order is saying that some of that older evidence could come in.
And I mean, that just
based upon agreement. That wasn't the judge making up something.
One of the things in the Nance case was a similar type of discussion about McMonagle and what does it mean, and it's quite common in family court.
And he wrote this order.
Yes. Although the only thing different than the prior order is the temporary and I believe the holiday schedule. But the discussion of McMonagle often is made in court without people really understanding what they mean by that.
Okay. You're down to 3 minutes. Sorry. All right.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm Elizabeth Bastet. I'm the pro bono counsel for Raymond Estepinian. And I have dragged my record in here today, much to the amusement of many people I ran into today, because the record is really important to read in this case, because it's easy to pull out certain pieces of what happened here and think they look strange by themselves, but there is a long history of at least three hearings that we have to look at in order to get to where the district court went in this case in February 2018.
You have a binder there that's at least 5 inches thick.
Yes, I do. It's quite heavy. It's a lot of fun to bring. As you guys know, this is an appeal from a district court order in a family law case. Appellate courts do not overturn these orders unless there is a unless there is a real abuse of discretion that is present. I know you guys are aware of that, but I like to say at the beginning, because this is a child custody case, and the courts put great weight on keeping child custody so that their children aren't batted back and forth.
Well,
and
unless there's legal error, right?
Correct.
I mean, we defer to factual findings, but if there's legal error, then that's a different thing.
I agree. And what I want to start with is the issue of jurisdiction, which was something you guys discussed in the last case, and I think it's very relevant here. In the original document statement, appellant was trying to appeal from both the August 2017 order and the February 2018 order. The August 2017 order, there was no timely notice of appeal filed. That appeal, that order is not before the court today. This is sort of like the last case where no matter what you feel about that previous order, although I don't think there's problems with it myself, but regardless what you feel about it, it's not here today. We can only look at the February 2018 order today. And even looking at the February 2018 order, there's problems, in my opinion, in the jurisdiction as to that order as well, and I don't believe that any part of this appeal is properly before this court.
Okay, so let me ask you this question. Mm-hmm. Is there a final custody order in this case or no?
I believe it's the August 2017 order.
So the August 2017 order is the final order in that case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Even though there was no actual motion pending?
There was a motion pending. It
was
the December 2016 motion filed by Mr. Estupinian.
Right.
They came for one hearing on it.
Right.
The judge repeatedly stated, and that's why this is so important, the judge went over and over and over, we need a hearing on these accusations. She said, she stood there and she counted off 10 plus issues that she believed she was concerned about with allowing appellant to continue to have joint custody. She went over and over and over it. These weren't just things that were raised by Mr. Estupinian. These were things that were discovered by a CPS investigator, passed along to the parenting coordinator, and the judge said, I want to get into these things. At the request of appellant's lawyer said, hey, wait, can we go outside and talk about this? They come back in and say, guess what, we don't need an evidentiary hearing. We're going to agree to temporary physical custody.
Because
avoiding an evidentiary hearing into all of these
things. Because the client was moving to Florida?
That's when that came up for the first time, although that never turned out to be correct. So she avoids an evidentiary hearing at that hearing. The very next day, the parties go to mediation, and mom violates that order. She picks the daughter up from school even though she has no right to. Dad files an emergency motion there very quickly back in court, and that is when the judge says, now I have more things to add, and I don't even have fingers. And the judge says, I want you to get a custody evaluation, signs that order, says, Mom, you're the one who is causing the need for this. I'm telling you, you have to pay 75%, Dad, 25%. Because these concerns I have all stem from Mom. So then time goes by, and they have a return hearing. Mom doesn't get the custody evaluation. They return to court, and there is no change. Mom has not brought any, hasn't gone to get the custody evaluation, and there's nothing for the judge to do. And the representation up here earlier by opposing counsel was that there was nothing in that hearing for anyone to believe it was a permanent order. But that's just not correct. The judge said several times, I need to turn this into a permanent order. Appellant is there. Appellant is represented by counsel. Appellant's counsel actually says, we agreed to the temporary physical custody because I could see where this was headed, Your Honor. And I could see, in fact, in that first hearing, you were actually going to give Mom supervised visitation at one point. So we decided to cut this off and agree to this. And
but that, I mean, that all makes sense, but the order itself says this is here for a return on the custody evaluation situation.
Right, and Mom is the one who is holding up the ability to have permanent physical custody decision.
I have total sympathy for the judge. You'd be very frustrated, but for due process, you have to give notice before you change something. So shouldn't the judge have said, all right, nothing's changed here. We're going to go back to where we were in December or January. I'm going to set this hearing in 2 weeks and make the ruling.
Whether the judge should have done that or not isn't before this court today. that's the situation we're in. That happened in a June 2017 and resulted in August 2017 order. Nobody appealed it. Nobody objected at the time. When the judge actually said, I have temporary orders, I need to make them permanent. Then later says, I do not want you guys coming back to court. Don't come back before me. How anyone could walk out of there and think, oh, this is just a temporary order and we're returning, I don't think that's a really credible claim you can make. I think everyone knows at that point, this is the permanent order.
And well, we're trying to interpret it, but it doesn't have any findings, so it doesn't really look like a permanent order. Go ahead, Judge Ball.
I was just going to ask them, why did the judge sign the order, the amended order from the January hearing in November, where it does indicate it's temporary custody, and what effect, if any, does that have then or on the August hearing from 2017?
I don't think it has any effect. I think everyone knew, and my opposing counsel agrees, everyone knew it was temporary up until that point. She agrees it's temporary.
I'm sorry, up until what point?
Up until they went to the June 2017 hearing, which the court said, I'm making these permanent.
But the amended order from the January hearing wasn't signed until November.
Right, it wasn't requested.
After June.
Right, but the point was made by opposing counsel was it was always temporary. It wasn't a changed order. That wasn't a modification. That was literally just correcting what had already happened. It's not a change.
So
it is, the minutes do say temporary. Everyone going to the August 2017 hearing, it's clear from the record, knows it's temporary. Nobody went into one hearing thinking it was different. They went into August 2017 hearing knowing. We have a temporary order, and then the judge made it clear, I'm making this a permanent order today. Don't come back to court. This is your permanent order.
But that's the issue here. When you're issuing a temporary order, judges have a lot of discretion to do that. You know, you send it to mediation, they're not working on it. Okay, I'm just going to, just so the kid gets started on something, you know, the kid's not with one parent exclusively, I'm going to put a temporary order. You don't have to have a lot of procedural protections. The issue here that she's raising is, in order to make that into a permanent order, even if everybody understands in the future, this is her argument. Even if everybody understands in the future, the permanent order is likely to be a lot like the temporary order, even if that's the understanding.
Right.
In order to actually make it into a permanent order, the judge has to do certain things by statute. And the question is, did the judge do those things?
And I understand that's the question.
And you're saying
that the question can't be answered because she didn't appeal from that order.
Right. So you're saying we shouldn't even look at the order. But the problem is we're trying to interpret what that order really is. And if it doesn't have any of the findings, as Judge Howell was just pointing out, is it what it purports to be? And can in February, can she just say, oh, that was my final order on this case? You know, that's Ms. McFarland's argument. You can't just call it a final order and all of a sudden it is.
But she called it a final order at the time. Nobody objected to it. Nobody appealed it. But there is a reason we have deadlines for appeal.
You're saying that was always understood to be a permanent order, even though the judge 6 months later signs an order saying that was a temporary order. So which is it? Is it temporary or is it permanent?
No. You're talking about two different orders now. The one that was made to be temporary is an earlier order. We're talking about the August 2017 order. That's an earlier November order that was made into a temporary order.
That's a strange
order.
Sequence.
Where there are multiple other three orders.
The second amended order from the January hearing wasn't filed until November, so months after the June hearing with the August order.
Right.
And you're saying that doesn't really mean anything that it was filed months later.
Right.
But nonetheless, the August order that referred to the June hearing never uses the words that this is a permanent final or anything like that, nor does it have any of the findings that go with the final order.
Right. And that should have been appealed from that order, but it wasn't. We have many orders that come through that are appealed. I myself have appealed them that don't have specific findings, that don't have those things. Your relief is to appeal them 30 days within when they are entered. Or the relief is to say, Your Honor, wait, you can't turn this into a final order, a permanent order. We haven't had an evidentiary hearing and we want one. I can tell you what the record shows when you read it is, appellant did not want an evidentiary hearing. She has stood in the way that she's not gotten a custody evaluation.
But back to the order, if matters are left open, we generally don't consider it a final order. I mean, the court needs to rule on the essential elements of what's in front of it. It doesn't say, like, the motion from December 2016 is granted. It doesn't say primary custody, and here is the schedule. It gives a schedule, but it's just a continuation of the temporary order schedule.
Right, and it was a temporary, the parties had stipulated to that order. Then there were issues with the attendance holiday schedule. That was clarified more, but it was a stipulated agreement between the parties that the court then turned into a permanent order.
Okay, all right, let's assume just for a moment, because you're running out of time, that we don't accept that argument and we say that the final order is actually February. What do we do with that order?
Well, that order has a lot of findings in it, and I think it actually meets the findings. There are findings in there as best the court can make without appellant following its order to get a custody evaluation. Because you have to remember, the person here who has not gone and done what she needs to do is appellant, and now she's asking this court to come in and tell the district court what to do without any information that has said it needs. So I think the court has made a lot of findings that would satisfy all the requirements and has determined that that there should be primary custody in the father.
But the argument of the appellant was there was no evidentiary hearing. It was canceled, and then the judge just went ahead and entered this order, assuming that the August order was the final order. But if it wasn't the final order, then shouldn't the judge have had a hearing and then made the findings?
No, because the appellant waived that hearing, and I think the record is pretty clear on it. She had the opportunity to have one. She cut it off at her request not to have it, and instead stipulated, then avoided going to get a custody evaluation for over a year. I think it's pretty clear what's going on. She does not want to get this evaluation. She does not want to have to stand.
It would have been a short hearing.
I'm sorry?
It would have been a short evidentiary hearing in light of those problems. But to say she waived it?
I would say she waived it, yes.
The transcript doesn't say she waived it. She said she agreed to the custody with Dad because she was moving to Florida.
Well, there's obviously, if you read the record, as I'm saying, there's questions as to whether that was ever actually something that was going to happen or just an excuse again to avoid an evidentiary hearing.
But I think the avoidance of the evidentiary hearing, if you want to characterize it as that, was early on, so on or about the time of the January decision. And part of the concern, I think, was the pending CPS investigation. Now, she was ultimately cleared, was she not?
Yes, she was cleared.
So in August, for example, that's approximately six months later, do we have any evidence or argument to suggest that she waived or wouldn't agree to an evidentiary hearing at or near that time?
It would be when the court entered it, told them, I'm entering a permanent custody hearing and their order, and there is no request on her part for an evidentiary hearing at that point, because the judge didn't just have the one CPS thing. And by the way, there was a lot of discussion about when the judge said, I don't really care if it's substantiated or not. The issue is she put her daughter in a situation where she was engaged in a fight with a neighbor, and her 7-year-old should never have been there. So substantiated or not, the court didn't really care, and that's actually in the February 2018 order. It specifically says that. Like, I don't, the substantiation or not isn't relevant to the decisions I made. The court had, at one count, 12 issues with appellant and letting her have custody of her child.
But it has an effect on whether it's a temporary order or not. And if you could see having a temporary order while the investigation was going on, and if the investigation's over and it's not going to be used, then one might think, all right, I agree to that, but I no longer agree to it.
Well, there was a very long hearing in which that never was raised, number one, by appellant or her counsel, both who spoke at the hearing. Second, what the judge really wanted was this custody evaluation. The judge said, I have all these concerns. I want the child to be spoken to. I want the mom to come in. I want explanations as to why. Is there a 24-hour daycare going on? Is she sleeping in the bed with mom's boyfriend? Is mom renting out renting out her rooms and having people in the house using drugs? All these things were out there. And she's the one who is choosing not to get an evaluation that is holding the whole thing up. So you have her holding hostage a final custody decision because she won't get an evaluation, and she's the one who's in the hot seat.
The judge could use that against her, but needs to make findings.
The judge, those are in both orders. But in any case, the August 2017 order isn't here. We're looking at the February 2018.
Okay, so let's go within your paradigm for one second.
Okay.
Let's say for one second that the August 16, 2017 order is a final custody order. So what's the February 1st, 2018 order? What is that?
It is a denial of a whole slew of relief that appellant is asking for, that the court says no.
Okay. So the relief it's asking for fundamentally is modification of the permanent custody order, is it not?
It doesn't ask for that. What it asks for is a modification. It's something about the temporary.
It's asking for the what you call the permanent custody decree, the August 16, 2017 order to be changed. It's asking for the terms of that to be changed. So why is that not a motion to modify?
I believe it was, and I believe the court denied it.
So why can't we look at this as an appeal, even within your paradigm, from a denial of a motion to modify? And in that case, did the district court follow all the procedures associated with a motion to modify?
I would agree, and I argued that in my fast-track response.
Okay. Your time is up, but a quick question. Do you have any explanation for what this agreement was on using past information under McMonagle? Was there an exception created here in this case?
My understanding from reading the hearing transcript was the judge was concerned that we're entering into this temporary agreement, but I have all these concerns about this past conduct because there's past DUIs and current DUI. If I enter this order, is someone going to then argue that was the consideration for this order when I really want to be considering all that stuff. And the parties to get this temporary, to get past this judge praying into these things, appellant agreed to it. The judge wanted to be able to consider things that the judge felt could get cut off if an order was entered and said, I want to enter the order, and so I want an agreement that we can look at all this stuff.
All right. Ms. Bassett, thank you very much. I didn't see you flipping through that binder here today.
You lugged it around for no reason.
I did a lot before I came.
All right. Thank you. All right. All right. Three more minutes almost.
The facts that were just relayed by Respondent's counsel about all of the bad things that mom was alleged to have done, again, that gets to the reason why the judge needed to have an evidentiary hearing. Those are the types of facts in dispute that need to be vetted through that process, not through some kind of summary proceeding. And the allegation that mom didn't do what she needed to do as far as getting an evaluation, there was a request for the judge to replace the evaluator that the judge denied. And so mom did take actions to try and get a new evaluation started after that June 2017 hearing. And the judge didn't allow it. And it's not a process that she can start unilaterally. So that's not something that then can be used as a basis to say, mom, you can't get back in the door to ask for custody because you didn't do what you were supposed to do because the judge had denied her request to make that happen. The finalness of an order in custody cases, we have statutes that require certain language in a final child support order, and we have statutes that require certain language in a final custody order. That statutory language was not included in the August 2017 order. That is a big indication of whether or not an order is final, and that was not in there. And again, and I believe I said this before, if somebody is stipulating to a final custody order, that should be very clear that they are intending to stipulate to a final custody order. And the transcript from that hearing, from the June 2017 hearing, has no clarity on any issues whatsoever, much less mom stipulating to a final custody order. And that's where, when the judge goes back in her February order and says, oh, no, that one was final, it becomes problematic. And as we see, the motion that was filed that asked for a review or a change of custody, the very last motion that was filed, that should have been set for an evidentiary hearing because she did allege a sufficient basis. So even if that prior order were final, which we're not saying it is, the judge should have set an evidentiary hearing on the changes that occurred and that were alleged in that last motion filed by mom, and she unilaterally denied that without even having a hearing on that. And that in itself is error.
So her argument is essentially that the August 2017 order, it may be that your party misunderstood what it was, but she's saying part of the misunderstanding is your client's fault because you didn't want an evidentiary hearing. You took steps to avoid it because your client was under CPS investigation at the time. So how can you come up here and complain that before issuing that order, the judge didn't have an evidentiary hearing when your client was trying to I'll use the word evade one just to work within her argument.
The record doesn't support the fact that mom was trying to evade an evidentiary hearing. She appealed the CPS substantiation. That was pending at the time of the January 2017 hearing. It was pending at the time of the June 2017 hearing, and it only was decided in I believe, late 2017 that she got that decision. And that is an evidentiary hearing, an evidentiary proceeding administratively. So clearly, the fact that she's pursuing an evidentiary proceeding in the CPS procedure is indication that she's not trying to avoid evidentiary proceedings. And she doesn't say it. There's no place in the record where there's representation saying, mom doesn't want an evidentiary hearing. No, we don't want to do that. We're going to just stop here and stipulate. It might have been something that dad read in or dad's attorney read in somewhere or the judge read in somewhere, but that's not sufficient. A judge should not be able to make conclusions that someone is agreeing to a final custody order modifying from joint to primary unless it's very clear that not just the attorney, the party, the mom to this child understands what the judge might be thinking she is giving up. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. McFarland. And again, Ms. Bassett, particularly for your pro bono assistance here. I hope it was a worthwhile experience for you. And you'll do it again.
Yeah, we really appreciate your participating in the program. As you guys all know, there are more cases and there are attorneys willing to take them. And a lot of, especially in the family court world, as you guys know, a lot of people can't afford attorneys. So when someone like you steps up and it's really helpful to them, but also to us. Especially in complicated cases like this. Can you imagine if someone just pro se was trying to sort through all this? It would make our jobs that much harder.
Procedural issues, jurisdictional issues.
Yeah.
Certainly not something any layperson is going to truly understand.
Right, exactly. So we really appreciate your participating in the program.
Yes, thank you very much.
All right, this matter will be taken under submission with a later written decision.